Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and Travelers Down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network and powered by largemanappears.com. I am your host, your blues brother on Thunder Road, Dave Ryan, joined as I am always by my faithful co-host, Stagger Lee Malone. Lee, I see you're having a sip of Pepsi Max for the working man tonight. You've changed off the Coke Z's for a while. Uncle Joe's going to be disappointed in you.
It's just what we had in the shop. It was the easiest thing to hand.
I'm the same, brother.
Yeah, I do enjoy Pepsi Max, especially the cherry. Cherry's a good one.
Oh, no, why'd you have to say that?
Listen.
It's like, I really like that thing, especially the worst version of it.
Well, I also enjoy a good vanilla Coke, so...
Yeah, no, I'll give you that.
And Pepsi don't do a vanilla variety that's available over here, so...
Have you had the vanilla Coke Z?
Yes, absolutely.
It's good stuff. But yeah, carbonated beverages aside, how have you been?
Well, I mean, we're delayed doing this podcast because I wasn't too well.
Yeah, you weren't. You weren't.
I had a pretty bad dose of sunstroke or heatstroke, whatever you want to call it.
Yes, folks, that is scientifically possible to get in Ireland.
Yeah, in spite of, like, there was a significant amount of cloud cover for the day.
Yeah,
I got fairly severely burned on the top of my head and did not realise until the next morning when I couldn't stand up without feeling dizzy and vomiting.
When you text me that you had heat stroke, I was just like, Jesus, like he might, like, that's very dog ate his homework levels. He could just say he didn't want to do it. As I was looking out the window, like where I was just like, it was fucking lashing rain when you told me. Now, granted, it was then I pieced together that it had happened to you the previous day.
Yes.
So I was like, right, okay.
The last time I had heat stroke was probably when I was writing reviews for Irish wrestling shows.
Oh, Lord.
But that was a different kind of heat.
Yeah, down a different kind of stroke.
But no, I'm good. Happy to be doing another podcast, and we have about 18 lined up now for the foreseeable future. It just seems like we have a string of shows we need to do.
Yeah, we've a lot of good stuff and a lot of bad stuff coming up. Which is good. It keeps the fires burning here over at Days of Thunder Central. I'm also coming to the end of my busy work season, which is going to help me to kind of be a bit more flexible and focus more on the shows, which is great. I did, for the first time in my 34 years, an escape room last week.
Oh, yeah. How was it? I've never done one.
Do you know, it was pretty good. I kind of, because of, like, it was in a work capacity and I was bringing younger people there, like, it was a bunch of teenagers, I was trying not to, like, actively solve puzzles for them, and I was just kind of trying to sit back and enjoy the experience. But we did one that was, like, it was up in Dublin, and it was all geography themed. So it was all around, like, travel and coordinates and things like that, and it was, like... we did two teams versus each other where there's four rooms, and it's, you do, like, say, we'll do room 1 and 2 while the others are doing rooms 3 and 4.
Okay, yeah.
They'll time us and then we'll flip reverse and they'll kind of compare our times at the end to see who did the quickest total clear. The team I was with lost, but it was a lot of fun. They're not as, like, I think the branding on some of them for some people is not great. Like, the phrase escape room implies a lot more claustrophobia than was present in my experience. Like, I think I've heard some people call them puzzle rooms, and I think that's much more appropriate. It's the closest I've ever felt to what was a childhood dream of appearing on the Crystal Maze.
Did you not want to go on the new Crystal Maze?
No, as much as I love Richard Ayoade, I think the magic was the Richard O'Brien Crystal Maze in the 90s. Not least because of that banging theme song, but I must have watched every episode of that old Crystal Maze back in the day.
Were you a Krypton Factor watcher?
Krypton Factor nearly missed me. I remember it, but I was very, very young when Krypton Factor was still a thing. So, like, your weekend light entertainment was... Crystal Maze kind of aired most days on
Channel 4. Yeah.
Challenge later when it came along. So I was that. I was Gladiators, the UK Gladiators. Mm-hmm.
The good one.
Yeah. Rep my big man Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what else. Like, I know we talked about it before when we started doing WMAC Masters that I watched Battledome for the brief period that was on the Saturday nights. Did a little bit of Robot Wars, never too much. Of the Robot Wars, like, if it was on, I'd watch the rest of it, but I was never, like, it wasn't appointment viewing for me.
Jonathan Pierce was off-putting for me, so
yeah. I was trying to think, like, what else was what else were light entertainment staples of an evening, because I was big, obviously Sky One used to do Simpsons Double Bill every day of the week, so that was happening.
Well, I mean, you're a little bit younger than I am, so you probably weren't a Noel Edmonds House Party watcher.
I was. Oh, I frequented Crinkly Bottom. There's one that'll be clipped. So Noel Edmonds was like a kind of like TV personality through the 80s and 90s, and he had this kind of, it was like nominally like a chat and
wacky skit show. Yeah.
That was like his house party, where he was at this country manor in a village called Crinkly Bottom, because this was UK TV humor in prime time back then. So I watched that. I remember Telly Addicts as well, his game show about TV that he hosted. All the slate of Barrymore shows as well, bit of Family Fortunes as well, Les Dennis.
Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, and then there's some stuff that seems to escape and the US find out about it and realize, Jesus, TV was fucking dull in the UK and Ireland in the 90s, like Big Break and Bullseye. Or there's like literally game shows where people play snooker or play darts.
The two worst sports in the world.
Yeah. Great fun to actually play when you have a few jars in you in a pub. Not great to watch necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
The darts of Bullseye were not the darts that you see now.
No interest in the darts.
People like it, and it's a lot more showbiz. Like, this was just like gruff owl lads in a smoky room trying to win a kettle.
Darts now is going through its attitude era.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, I remember that guy coming out to Cult of Personality doing the punk entrance. Oh god, tragic. But yeah, like, the escape room was pretty damn good. I think it's like there's a nice variety of puzzles that if you're in a team, it's going to play to some people's strengths and some people's weaknesses. And what I found interesting, as somebody who likes to compose quizzes and challenges and activities for people as part of my job, to see them do it in such a way where they've constructed the puzzles, and I can't even put a finger on how they've done it, but in a way that you literally can't solve it by yourself.
Okay.
Like, between the time limit and the nature of some of the challenges requiring you to be in more than one part of the room at a different time or looking at two different things at the same time, the circumstances force you to cooperate in a way that was really, really interesting to me. So, like, one of the reasons we would bring people there is, like, part of if they're forming a group and stuff like that, you have to go through just, like, a theory of group dynamics where you kind of have to let them go through the awkward phase, go through the attempting to be a team, go through the fighting with each other phase, and then at the end of the fighting, they become a formed team.
It's the whole work retreating and, like, making the you know, teams into a team.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's all very cheesy and very corporate when you talk about it that way. But like, when you watch it in action, the like, I think there's five stages in this kind of the theory of it. Like, it does actually work. So you're just kind of sitting there going, fuck. Like, I hate that this works, but it works.
Yeah. Well, it's a theory for a reason.
Yeah. But it's good because like, there's different kinds of, it doesn't, it was also specifically done to not, because I think when you hear there's challenges with coordinates and stuff like that, people are thinking, oh, there's going to be maths involved. And there's literally like, I think there was one very basic addition and subtraction thing that like, you were able to just do, like anybody really could have done off the top of their head. But other than that, like, it's very accessible. Same with levels of literacy. It's very, very accessible as well. Right. Like, it's really interesting. I'd love to actually sit down with like game makers from places like that and hear like how they approach it, how they plan these things out. It's much more fascinating than World Championship Wrestling, I'll tell you that.
Actually, one thing we haven't mentioned is since our last show.
I have no idea what you're about to say now.
We've actually met in person.
Ah, yes, we did.
And we never took a picture to prove it.
Yeah. First time in, nearly 4 years?
Coming like, up in 3.5.
Three and a half, easily,
yeah.
Yeah, it's 3.5. So it's February 2020. Yeah, mm-hmm. So three, almost 3.5 exactly, yeah. We met at the last Irish wrestling show either of us will ever go to, as long as we're this side of the ground, I imagine. And yeah, then a pandemic, jobs and laziness got in the way. So it was nice to see you, pal.
Yeah, it was. It's good to see each other.
And we're going to see each other again in London in a couple of weeks. And allegedly there's some sort of wrestling show going on. Not that we fucking know.
Who cares about that?
Yeah. Certainly not Tony Khan, anyway. It was nice to see you. We went ham on some Korean fried chicken.
We did.
Yeah, was this your first visit to the mighty Chimak?
It was, and it was delightful. I've been telling everybody about it all week. It was great.
Oh, it's so good. If you're ever in Dublin, check out Chimak. There's one on Ainslie Street and one in, I think, Terranure is the other one, I think. But yeah, Korean fried chicken, bacon and cheese fries, the whole shebang. You got the same as me, didn't
you? Yeah, we actually, the three of us got the same thing because you had sold it so well. But even with your selling hat on, you undersold just how good these nugs were.
I'll put it over huge, brother.
Yeah.
The one exception was Jamesy, who was with us, got Kim cheese fries, which he put over huge as well. I'd never gotten them because it's one of those places I was saying, I'm there so infrequently that like I really want to try loads of other stuff on the menu, but then I go there and I'm like, I haven't been here in like 3 months, so I'm getting the thing I like.
Yeah.
You know? And it's one of the permanent menu items as well. Although I was interested, they did have like Korean fried chicken poutine.
They did. Like, they also had some awesome sounding brunch. What was it? Chicken and waffles?
Chicken and waffles with a big old egg on it. Mm-hmm. The thing we were too full for, they had like pretzel covered ice cream cookie sandwiches, also a cornflake variety if you're not into pretzels. I've had them before and they are unreal. They also do, if you were feeling very ladies who lunch, they do froze, which is like slushy rose.
Okay.
In tiny little cups, but yeah, we weren't feeling that spicy. We were just more looking out at the model of the amount of rain because we were about to go watch football outdoors.
Yeah, which, listen, it was a good experience.
Yeah.
We didn't,
it was a pleasure. Is this our last... no, it's not. There'll be a show coming out right as we're
about to meet up.
About to leave for Wembo. Mm-hmm. So it's not our farewell before that. But that was a good time. We're looking forward to more good times and more good fun with the gang at the end of the weekend. Or at the end of the month, should I say. Lee, we were talking back and forth about this show, so we're going to get into Thunder in a minute. But we've reached a point in 1999 now where, and we've been doing this show for long enough, where we've kind of been looking at the format and thinking about, like, what could we add to the... Because I'm happy with the review style at the moment, and listeners seem to be as well. So I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater or anything like that. But I was thinking, like, is there something that we can add a little bit of spice, a little bit of flavor? And we would never, as we've always vowed to do, we are not going to just start reviewing every episode of Nitro. For us to dip over to Monday nights, it requires a very special circumstance. that we remain steadfast on, because also if we were to start doing Nitro and Thunder, it would double the remaining run of this podcast and probably half the level of sanity on the Zoom call every time we do these. But something we had said we wanted to capture more of are like the backstage and wrestling world machinations that are happening. Mm-hmm. So even if we're not, because we're still living the gimmick of like trying not to add too much context to storylines, like to try and figure them out based on Thunder. But in terms of like the backstage fallout or the backstage pretext, I'm happy to delve into that a bit more. So what I'm going to do, for as long as, again, sanity prevails, is to have a look at the Observer for each of the timeline shows on the free feed, and just have a talk about like what kind of stuff is going on. And I think what we're going to do is, unless it gets to a stage where I'm just like, fuck this, let's just switch it on and off between each other, I like the idea that I'm just going to tell you without you knowing beforehand. Like, I'm going to read the WCW section and the headline section of the Observer and tell you what's going on in the world of wrestling this week, because some of the stuff, like, this one week alone, like, just dipping in, vindicated our decision already, I think.
Yeah, well, I just want to say that, like, our thing at the beginning of the show is we weren't going to be every other podcast that, like you said, did Nitro, did every... fucking went through like the Observer with a fine-tooth comb to say, WCW is such a mess. But I think we've reached a point of Thunder where the shows are to such a level that we could probably get through a review in like 40 minutes.
Especially this one. So like, yeah. to pull the curtain back for a second, this is a pre-tape Thunder with four matches on it.
Mm-hmm.
And a hell of a lot of video packages, yeah, which we will talk about. Don't get me wrong; we are going to go through it segment by segment as we always do. But like you said, Lee,
we're not going to review a Nitro recap match.
Hmm.
We're not going to do that. So yeah, I think now is like the perfect time to start kind of delving more into the background of what's going on in the company, especially consider what's to come.
Yeah. Yeah, because we are prepping the ground, of course. We are, like, only a couple of months away from Vince Russo's arrival, the final horseman of the WCW apocalypse.
And it's fair to say, the first 18 months were probably the most important Thunder ever was. From here on out, Thunder just doesn't matter. In the sense of the company, like, are just, no, it's all about Nitro. We gotta beat Raw. And apart from like one or two really landmark things they attempt on Thunder,
yeah,
it's pretty dire.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be interesting because we see things happen on the show sometimes that we know are references or are like sometimes it's very obvious. Like we're like in 2000, we're going to have stuff like Bischoff referencing the Sid Vicious Scissors thing. So like nobody needs that explained to them. But there's going to be some stuff that happens on the air that like we're going to miss because we're pulled 24 years out of the context.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be nice for this feature to help. Like we don't have a name for it or anything like that. If you've got a name for it, hit us up at WCW ThunderPod. But yeah, I just like the idea of having a look. And like I said, there's a lot of stuff in here this week. Like just in one week in professional wrestling, the amount of shit that was happening is crazy.
As an example, Scott Hudson is now the main Nitro commentator.
So we had mentioned that on Nights of Nitro, hadn't we? That, like, he was just there and no one ever paid attention to it. So Dave wrote up about this and it's like, it's kind of... They talk about it, but I don't think there's real... So anyway, what he says is Scott Hudson replaced Tony Schiavone as host of Nitro with no explanation given on air, and it was made clear that Schiavone was there because they had he and Mike Tenay both come out with microphones for no apparent reason, as you might recall, during the Rodman Savage angle. Hudson was told while in the studios doing the 7:16 Saturday night taping for the next day to come to Nitro, but not told why. He wasn't told until 6 p.m. on the night of the show by Bischoff that they wanted him to host the show. Bischoff had earlier told Schiavone that afternoon they wanted him to take a break, which Schiavone was none too thrilled about. On the air, Hudson opened the show with Bobby Heenan with no mention is made to why. The official company line is that it's a two-week experiment, but with Schiavone's work roundly being criticized and Hudson bringing an air of freshness to the show based on the first week and the almost unanimous reaction to it, the change looks more than temporary. So that's an interesting piece there, just on just on what's happened.
I don't disagree that it brought an air of freshness. We said that, like, he wasn't he wasn't as accomplished as Tony, but he wasn't gonna be.
Yeah,
but him and Brian kind of did, like, bring something kind of fresh to the show.
Yeah, the other major change backstage at WCW at the moment is. So there's two things that I definitely want to hit on, and then I want to hit a few of the headlines, right? So the booking situation has slightly changed as of in or around this week. There's no defined date put on it by Dave. But Kevin Nash, while still sort of booking the show, has had greatly diminished power as of the last couple of weeks.
I wonder so, why. Who has come back that could have greatly diminished his power?
Yeah. So, the booking trio that are ahead of him. Now, bear in mind, like, it's worth saying, and it's mentioned to death at WCW as well, that even when Nash was booker, Bischoff still had final say on everything.
Mm-hmm.
So he was never truly by himself, but he was writing a lot of the show, and he still continues to write up until Russo arrives.
It's September, isn't it?
It's September-ish. Yeah, he's still writing because there's that one
the
very infamous Kevin Nash Thunder is still to come. But anyway. The booking triad that are kind of like in charge with Nash kind of greatly diminished behind them is Bischoff, and by Bischoff I mean Bischoff and Hogan, and Dusty, which is like just a strange trio. Now, there was that whole funny thing, like the late 80s, early 90s, is like when this company was in doubt, they just put Dusty back in the job booking, regardless of the quality of what Dusty would put out. But he was just like, he was well liked, you know. But yeah, so that's what's happening now. And like, although Nash doesn't get away scot free, and a lot of the WCW talent are just kind of essentially booking their own shit now, or at least like lobbying these guys to book their own shit, it's not going to make a noticeable difference on screen. The noticeable difference comes later in the year, I'm afraid.
See, this is where the whole Nash, like the boys love Nash thing, because, you know, Kevin Nash was working for the boys, and then evil Terry came back and took control of the book, and then Dusty got some power back. So Nash had his hands tied.
Yeah. It's like, it's a real kind of spider diagram trying to keep track of who has the book in 99 through the return, like the start of the Millionaires Club stuff in 2000. Like it's hot-shotting back and forth, because for those who don't follow it, like, we are not too many months away from fucking Kevin Sullivan being given back the book again.
I was just about to say, we know by the close of 1999 Kevin Sullivan has the book, because what happens?
Yeah. I find it interesting as well that Dave notes the plan for one of the big kind of heavily pushed matches at Road Wild is that there was going to be a tag match with Miss Madness and Rodman versus Medusa and Savage.
Okay, but that was
That was one of the planned directions. Or Savage and Gorgeous George versus Rodman and one of the women. Like, he said, what he said was that, like, the plan at this moment is two singles matches, the women and Savage and Rodman being separate. But that one of the ideas that's been on the table is to do some sort of mixed tag involving Medusa, Miss Madness, and Gorgeous George, some combination of that. So whether Medusa wasn't going to get fired and she was going to be on one tag team, it would explain why all that stuff felt incredibly rushed.
Yeah.
Like, they shot about a month's worth of angles with firing both of them in, like, the 1 week.
It feels like Savage got them both fired from his groups because he thought Gorgeous George could have the spot then.
Yeah. Although, like, again, like, going with the context of Death of WCW as well, is like, Turner are so fucking pissed about this, the Tory thing.
Yeah.
So we're not that far away from Bill Bush, barring like profanity, crotch chops, swearing, man on woman violence, things like that, without express approval from the Turner like executives. So that's kind of like, I imagine maybe that's one of the reasons that the idea of the mixed tag match got pulled, like it rarely seeing sense.
Yeah, we don't want the man that was literally just on live television hitting a woman in a mixed tag match.
I want to give you one thing, and I'm glad you're sitting down for it, before I give two wider wrestling world context things. The plan at the moment is for Eric Bischoff to get the presidency of the company and turn heel again.
Were they going to do a Bischoff-Hogan feud?
Also, this is fucking wild to me. The plan for the 722 Thunder, which was the one we watched last week, was for the in-ring return of Arn Anderson.
Sorry, what?
Yes.
How, like, Arn...
That's what Dave's written here. Like, throw away two lines here.
But Arn was...
In-ring return.
Arn was never scheduled...
Like, Arn was done.
Yeah.
He's fucked, like.
I thought that was, like, a well-known fact by this point.
Yeah, I guess not. I guess no one clued in fucking the lads in charge.
I have never heard that about Arn coming back. Ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, he goes into talking about the diminished power of Kevin Nash as well. But, yeah, that was the plan was for Arn Anderson to return to the ring at the 722 Thunder in Moline, Illinois. Although you know how WCW plans are.
Fucking hell.
I love Catty Dave. The other two things as well, just to show you how like things weren't all gravy over on the other side. Around this time, it looks like the Rena Miro sexual harassment lawsuit is wrapping up.
Mm-hmm.
She's already lost one key phase of it. So the sexual harassment lawsuit was a $140 million lawsuit against Vince and Titan Sports. And two of the conditions she had set that she wanted was she wanted the legal right to use the name Sable as a performer outside of WWF. And she also wanted the rights to and royalties from her Playboy shoot that had just come out around this time, which totaled about $850,000, according to Dave here. But she has just lost the first one of those claims. So basically, there's no legal precedent for somebody whose fictional character was created by someone like WWF to be able to take that fictional character away without the express consent of said company. So she's been told by the judge she's not being allowed to use Sable anymore outside of the Fed.
I thought she was referred to as Sable in her second...
It was accidental.
Okay, in WCW,
when she was showing up in the crowd,
yes.
She also tries to contend as part of the lawsuit that she was just there as a fan.
Okay,
that was her official line in court. But yeah, I remember reading in Death of WCW, there's like there's a line Reynolds and Alvarez write about there must have been steam coming out of Bischoff's ears when somebody just flat out called her Sable on commentary.
Didn't she do another Playboy shoot and was she not referred to as Sable?
She did. Or was I don't know if she did another one in the 90s. Yeah, it was post-return. She did one with Tori.
Yeah.
Because remember they did the lesbian angle with the two of them. Yeah. Not the first, nor probably the last Tori Wilson lesbian angle that Vince would book. Actually, I can't even blame Vince wholly because Heyman had the book on SmackDown for at least one of those Tory lesbians.
If not both, actually, because they weren't very far apart either.
No. There are some ways in which those men are very philosophically different, and those specific ways, they are very much the same. At least they were. The other thing that's happening, and I really want to mention WWF, it's just this past week where they announced the special guest referee for SummerSlam is Jesse the Body Ventura.
Hell yeah. Jesse the Mind. He was no longer the body, he was the mind.
And Dave did note as part of that he was kind of hoping with his political ambitions and stuff like that in the wake of the Owen Hart death, that Jesse would be the one to push for like a regulatory body in professional wrestling, and kind of noted a disappointment that it never really came to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, like, apparently, and again, I don't remember at the time, but apparently he spoke very strongly after it did happen, and then it kind of, like, just never followed through.
And then, amazingly, he got a payday from Vince. I can't understand that at all.
I don't know if that's what Dave is outright trying to suggest, but, yeah.
Well, I don't know if you recall, but like we remember that Jesse was there when the screwdrop happened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen the footage.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the footage. Yeah, just an interesting time. Goldberg has recently re-signed for, I think, a $1.5 million downside guarantee. Foley's on the shelf for the last while. He got double knee surgery around now, but he still gets rushed back.
He gets rushed back for the SummerSlam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's like Dave said in the newsletter. He's not expected to be back.
Foley, there's no way Foley misses any Raws, because this is the point where they do the Triple H China Foley number one contendership changes.
Yeah.
So Foley had to miss like maybe one or two Raws max.
Yeah, for the actual surgery, and then was still like just a madman.
Because even the Raw post SummerSlam, he loses the title.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. There was one last bit, because I switched over to my notes and I had handwritten this because I remembered that this was around this time. This Thunder takes place around the time of the second infamous Hogan radio interview of 1999. So for those of you who don't remember, you can look it up. I want to say the audio is online. Hogan called in, or was a guest on Mancow's, who's a Mancow, who's like a kind of sports shock jock type guy, on his radio program. And during that, basically eviscerated the entire WCW roster, called all the cruiserweights and mid-carders midgets, said like Goldberg was dog shit. Basically, they just torched everybody. But now Hogan's back in favor. Him and his boy are back booking. So he was doing a PR cleanup on WCW Live this past weekend, where he put over Goldberg huge, as like, so I can't remember, it was like an engaging personality or something he called it. But very funnily enough, after kind of praising the roster and trying to put out those fires, he said a very interesting thing, Lee, that I think is worth mentally noting at this point. He swore you would never see him in the red and yellow ever again.
It happens in like
about a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's literally our next night of Nitro.
What a fucking piece of shit, Hogan.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, let's get straight in. Now that we've set ourselves the context,
to interrupt, before we get to Thunder.
Okay.
You are a very infrequent guest in the... I shouldn't say guest. A very infrequent poster in the Voices of Wrestling Slack.
Yes.
And I saw you... I think it was I that summoned you the other evening.
You did. You lit your candles.
And I summoned the Dave Bat-Signal.
It's not that I don't want to. Like, I always have a good time when I'm in there. I just there's so much shit to keep on top of, man.
But the context of why you were summoned is our host, our boss, some may say, Rich Craich, was absolutely incredulous that I host a podcast by the name of Days of Thunder.
Yep.
And have never seen said movie, Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
So I am now making it a full-time bit that I will never watch Days of Thunder until this podcast ends.
Like, that was my contention as well, is like Days of Thunder has been up in at least one and I think two movie polls on our Patreon. And it's lost. Like, it's finished last place both times, I think.
Yeah.
So it's not like we have put it on the offing. I think Rich Craich needs to put his $5 where his mouth is. If he wants to vote for it.
He needs to put his $15 where his mouth is if it comes.
He can request it then, but he can be around just to vote for.
He can. If
you know what's going to happen now, you pointed out that somebody's immediately going to subscribe at the TRL tier and fuck you over, kill the bit in 1 week.
if Mr. Craich ever listens to this, I'm going to purposely make it my sole purpose not to watch this movie until we get through the entire run of Thunder.
I'm going to timestamp this and send it to
As friend of the show Paul Walsh rightly pointed out, watching NASCAR based movies is not such a big deal in Europe as it would be in the States.
Unless it's Talladega Nights.
No, that's obviously the important one to watch.
Yes, the documentary of NASCAR, you might say. Anyway, yes, with all your call-outs for the week out of the way, with your list of enemies vented, do you have anything about Ryan Nemeth while you're at it?
So the people that are banned from the podcast are...
I heard Chris Daniels showed up to do a pre-tape backstage at Days of the Thunder and got sent home.
Do you know what's funny? I might actually be on a podcast with Craig this month.
Not anymore. Not anymore.
Oh, I love it.
Right, okay, let's just do it. This is Thunder, episode 73. It's the second half of the tapings from Moline, Illinois, 29th of July, 1999. We have a 2.8 rating. Surprisingly, this taped edition of Thunder is up 0.2 on the week before. An interesting one. This is, as I wrote, a four-match taped Thunder. This could be the best or bleakest edition of the show yet. We shall see, but I'm not hopeful. Straight into it with no kind of big shot at the desk, because this is a pre-tape. Tanay is reminding us that as we leave Nitro, as we leave July, we are on the build to Road Wild, and I'm sure you are absolutely pumped for... There are two pay-per-views that on the WCW calendar every single year are guaranteed debacles, and that's Uncensored and Road Wild.
It's amazing that they had two every year.
Yeah, two.
Not just
it's
one.
Not even just one. It's like, that one's always a stinker. It's like, no, they've got two. A biannual stinker.
We've got one either side of the calendar. We've got to make sure we hit both of them.
Even when the shows were good, these were bad. Yes. Now all the other shows are bad and these are worse.
We got to go back and do a show for free in front of the racist bikers. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This, by the way, a very eventful trip to Sturgis that I cannot wait for us to read the Observer about. I kind of gave you a little peek behind what happens.
Yes.
But it's if you don't know the stories, it's a very notorious trip to Sturgis.
People talk about the plane ride from hell. Oh, boy.
Oh, the bike ride from hell is going to do it. We go straight into the first of many video packages tonight. It's a Hogan and Nash one. Now, there's a lot of bad video packages, a lot of superfluous video packages, and multiple extended Nitro segments on this show. What I will say about this one video package is it might be one of the best ones they've ever shown on Thunder, because it had a voiceover. It went step by step through the entire history these two men have with each other. It explained to you why they're in opposition to one another. And hopefully, not for you and I, but hopefully for the casual observer, they might be interested in seeing them fight now. Rather than the usual disconnected series of GIFs that they show with like generic industrial music playing underneath it.
Did you not think there was some real rewriting of history going on in this one?
Oh, look, 100%. But that's wrestling, baby.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're not accepting rewriting of history, you need to get out of showbiz.
I did love that it was like before the NWO and the Wolfpack, Hulk Hogan was a star, and then Kevin Nash showed up.
I love that in certain contexts, right? They will name drop Vince McMahon.
Mm-hmm.
They'll name drop Steve Austin. They'll name drop this, that, or the other. And then you get video packages like this where they will do anything but refer to the fact that these men were also in another company once.
They came from up north.
It's very strange. Very strange. But it's a good video
package. It was a good video package. And I'll give them credit. They do shit all over the finger poke of doom.
Yes. But that is, you want to talk about rewriting history. If there's one thing I would be excising from the history these men have together, it's that.
They really, like, they hit you over the head with the fact is, like, this will not be another finger poke of doom. They're going to have, this is a heated feud. It will be a match.
Yeah. I wonder, like, in their heart of hearts, I'm sure no parties would admit to it, but I wonder in their heart of hearts how quickly they realized that the finger poke of doom was, like, a massive miscalculation.
I'd say it took a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Because Nash goes right into the Rey feud and Goldberg is fucking DOA, basically.
Mm. Yeah. And there's
Hogan gets to do his weird double turn with Flair.
Yeah, there's so many, like, Goldberg is catching so many strays around this time and he's still got some of the worst ones left to go.
I don't think we ever talked about that, but the Hogan Flair, was it the Super Brawl match?
Yeah.
Was the best pay-per-view number they ever did, like,
yeah,
post Starrcade.
Also, it's so disappointing because of the two, there's one person who you would assume it was their idea. But something I don't think we harped on enough when it happened was that the double turn was Flair's idea.
Oh, yeah, Flair wanted to be heel again, yeah.
Flair wanted to be heel, but now Flair, it's around now again, falls out with the company again, mm-hmm. and he's off TV for a while. And then he comes back for a while, and then he's buried in the desert.
Which I can't, really can't wait for that.
I can't wait for Flair buried in the desert.
Anyway, shall we get to the first match?
Do we have to?
No.
I have a little bit of research I did as well, because Tanae during this intro sequence pumps up. Do you know who's on the next Nitro, Lee?
No.
It's Kiss.
Ah. I've never cared for Kiss.
Which it leads to a very, very important part of the death of WCW.
It does.
In the Kiss Demon.
Yes.
And his special main events. But do you know how much Kiss were paid for their one appearance?
950,000.
No, you've actually highballed it for once. $500,000. Okay,
well.
It bombed in the ratings. This is from The Torch. And Wade said that he believed it would spell the end for musical appearances. I think there was one or two more, but the level of name was greatly diminished after this. So this is Bischoff, I believe, his justification for it. I'd met Gene Simmons of the rock band Kiss earlier in the year. We threw around different ways for us to work together. All of our ideas involved licensing deals. So the band had its heyday in the 70s and 80s. It still had a huge following. To this day, Kiss still has a fan base that will buy just about anything that has the Kiss name on it. It's a little like that Star Trek thing. Such a Bischoff thing to say. Gene Simmons is a licensing and marketing machine. I've never met anyone who understands promotion to the extent that Gene Simmons is. So basically, this whole quote was like, Gene Simmons worked Bischoff,
yeah,
and he wasn't willing to admit it. Like, Gene Simmons mm-hmm. saw a fucking money mark and absolutely outworked his boy and got some amount of money for this. We will talk about it when Dale Torborg shows up as the Kiss Demon, but the fucking money that Kiss got to have just a completely different guy pretend to be the Kiss Demon and wrestle mm-hmm. in a specified series of main event matches was
outrageous. I'll never forget, I think it was Cribs, and Simmons brings the camera crew into the Kiss memorabilia room, and it's literally, as it says there, everything you can think of, from the coffin, tea towels, fucking Pez dispensers, yeah, everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Our first match, and I can't believe you wanted us to rush to this, is the Cat versus Barry Darso. Cat gets on the microphone. He predicts he will beat the chump in less than 5 minutes. He asks if any rednecks here in Illinois have a watch or can tell time. Darso out, and I had to say, he was looking profoundly divorced.
As I have the Repo Man out here stealing a living in 1999.
Yeah,
he really did. He looked like shit. He has the hair grown out, but is like very much losing the battle.
Yeah,
he's got what looks like really old gear, and he hasn't
ill-fitting.
Tanned or worked out or done anything to be
like if a young wrestler came out in gear that looked that terrible in that condition, mm-hmm. like he would get an absolute bollock.
It's fucking sad.
He looked so defeated and so out of shape and so disheveled that I actually looked up to make sure he hadn't died, because I would have felt really bad if I'd ripped him and he just died like right after.
Still gone, because he does all the conventions as a member of Demolition.
Yeah. Yeah. only 39 years old in this match, it's worth saying, and looked every day of 58.
But that was the 80s, man. The 80s fucking aged people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great philosopher, Buddy Wayne said.
Tanay mentions before the match starts that Sting is still WCW president. And I had a thought of Sting referring to himself as Mr. President. Like George Michael would refer to himself as Mr. Manager.
Yes. Oh, I would. Yes. Yeah, Mr. President. I would enjoy that. Unfortunately, the Sting presidential era, you'll be shocked to learn, doesn't last much longer. Well, I mean, neither did
George Michael run as Mr. Manager, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another thing that I was reading in WCW, where this presidency goes next. And fucking hell. This company, like, I had forgotten actually when I was reading back about it that when Flair originally won the presidency, the stip was presidency for life. No, it was for life at first, and then they changed it. Yeah,
but Eric Bischoff is president again, right? He's on screen authority.
Something anyway. He's an advisor. Yeah. So is J.J. Dillon still, and then RPVP is
Nick Lambrose still kicking about.
Barry Darso hits the laziest single leg takedown I've ever seen to give the Cats something to think about. I will say, we kind of harped on Barry Darso's gear.
Cats
gear is shocking as well. I remember later in his run, him being in like the velour pants and stuff like that, and at least it looking like, I still didn't like it, but it was still upmarket gear at least. Like, he's got a red singlet with like CAT in capital letters in Helvetica on it, and then black knee pads. They both look like wrestling school dorks in this match. Like, it's actually embarrassing that this would be let on national TV in 1999. Like, all the prelim dudes have better gear. The only people I can think of is that don't have better gear than him are the Texas Hangman.
Yeah, you're not wrong, dear. Actually, fucking haven't seen the Hangman in I don't know how long. But yeah, no, they have absolutely shit gear. But yeah, no, the two guys here, just, like, I know it's a tape show and all, but, like, come on, have some fucking pride in your work. Like, or put some pride in your appearance, even.
Yeah, especially like a guy like, you know, whatever about Barry Darso, you can get where he is on the totem pole. But like, Cat is being positioned to be pushed up this card.
Depressing.
Yeah, no, it's the wrong decision. And I want to revisit your burial of the Cat that you had started before I cut across you. But like, you would think the very least you would do, like, if they're like, they're not putting the world title on him, but relative to where he deserves to be, they're strapping the rocket to him. You think the first thing you do is spend like a reasonable amount of money on gear?
Yeah, because he initially had the shorts, didn't he? And he'd wrestle barefoot.
Yeah.
And now he's kind of moved to a singlet for no apparent reason, because like the whole thing is he's not a classic wrestler. He's a martial arts guy.
Yeah.
So I don't understand the logic there. But as I was saying, I fucking hate the Cat, man. Like, he's been on our screens for the majority of 1999 at this point, right?
Yeah, well, like, I can't... It's been so long now, I can't remember.
Like, when he came in, he was absolute dog shit. And we kind of laughed about it.
Yeah. Oh, like, he's still to this day, like, you know, his... He stopped mostly doing the rebound feliner off the middle rope because he'd whiff it so much. But like that was a good bit for a while.
But now he's just kicking people in the head with the slipper.
Yeah. Yeah. Kicking again with the soft side of the slipper. Like, he's not super kicking them.
Like, it's bad, and it's not funny. It's not heelish. It's not anything. It's just like Ono and the Cat feel like they're on every show and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, he's gonna be all over this, and we're still a good while away from like Commissioner Cat, that I think I was saying before, at least gets him out of the ring mostly. Because like, if you're gonna pick one of him just talking or him wrestling, I don't remember me at age 11 being particularly irked by him as a babyface commissioner. So I kind of almost look forward to that.
Yeah, at least that'll be something different, and he'll, like you say, he'll not be wrestling as much.
Yeah. So crowd already massively distracted, and could you blame them? There's a lockup in the corner. Darso slams Cat and does some strikes from the mount. Snapmare out of the corner. He does standing axe handles, the sign of a real great modern professional wrestling match. Cat then gets Darso in the corner. Foot choke, whips him to the opposite side. Wishbone off the post. The ref gets distracted and Sonny chokes Barry Darso. Tanay has... yeah, Tanay has absolutely no understanding of the passage of time in this match, because he said we're only about a minute into this match, it's easily 3 minutes in. But I understand how you can become kind of unmoored from reality watching the Cat and Barry Darso wrestle. Darso does a whip and a follow-up clothesline, whips him again, but punch to the gut, terrible backdrop suplex for two. Ref gets distracted for a third time. The shoe gets rolled into the ring. Shoe to the head for the win. Bad.
Yeah, they celebrate winning in 4.5 minutes like they've won the US title or whatever. Awful.
Now, Lee, for this next segment, I want to turn to you. Because I saw this and I kept quiet about it. And I was like, I cannot wait until Lee sees the segment. Because he is going to lose his goddamn mind.
Well, Dave, let me tell you. I lost my goddamn mind watching this segment.
Yes. So, for those of you who missed the show a couple of weeks ago, Lee led a terrific tirade that you can listen to in isolation on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel, where our podcasts do get posted as well, if that's your preferred method of listening. About how the WWE Network and the way it is edited and censored is destroying wrestling history. And this was brought to us on the heels of a Nitro where the entire Megadeth performance and thus Goldberg return to WCW were cut out of the program. Now the floor is yours, Lee, for the coda to that segment.
So, the next recap, or the next video package on this show, was in fact a really well put together Goldberg video package. We've talked about like these Goldberg video packages in the past. They're actually one of the better things WCW do, because it's very much high impact moves, set to music, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah.
So, all of that said, Dave... We, like you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we had the Goldberg returning to crush him. Big part of his character at this time is the fact that he comes out to Megadeth. And this video package is actually set to crush him. And it plays in full on the network.
Yeah.
And I got very angry. And I'm trying not to get angry now.
Yeah, because it's almost like it's actually worse than if they'd edited this as well, isn't it? I don't know why it is, but it is. It's almost like they're going, here's what you could have had.
You're
never going to hear him coming out to the ring to this.
It genuinely makes the fucking hatchet job that they did on his return. It genuinely makes it like 25 times worse, 100, like whatever you want to say. The fact that the full song plays in this package, like, it's inexcusable. Either edit it out altogether.
Yeah, the entire song unedited.
Like, either edit it out altogether or just let it fucking play on the entrance. Like, it has to be one or the other. You can't have this middle ground where they're fucking missing segments of the song playing.
The other thing about it as well is that the network has been around for what, like 9 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Nearly 10? And this hasn't been caught yet?
Because nobody watched Thunder on the network. Yes. Except us.
This is the thing. Well, now, to be fair, at launch, Thunder wasn't on the network.
That's true.
Thunder only got added, I think, maybe the year before we started this. But it's just hilarious nonetheless that it's such a lazy job of editing and that no one actually cares anyway. The chances are they probably just could have left all iterations of Crush Him in and it would have been fine.
And like 4 segments from now on the show, we get Goldberg coming out. Like they do a full Goldberg Kurt Hennig match from Nitro and they edit out Crush Him.
Yeah. Even on the same show. So it's not like the intern in Stamford just missed this episode. No, he watched this episode and he edits it out later, but not now.
It's infuriating. Like, it genuinely, it pisses me off so, so much. And I don't want to scream and shout about it because I've fucking done it already.
Yeah.
But it's so fucking irritating.
It made me mad for like half a second until I thought about how mad it would make you, and then I just started giggling.
I'm not like, I know I'm being pretty calm about it now, but at the time I was fucking fuming. And then the fact that he comes out later on to de-edit it in,
it's so fucking, it makes it even better.
It's just, I hate WWE. I genuinely, I hate this fucking company and what they do to history. It's fucking, it's inexcusable. Fuck them.
I hope they keep doing this. We get a recap, another recap, and this one is just like what happened with the dissolution of Team Madness. It was Medusa and Mona confronting Randy to say that George is behind the whole thing. They start preaching this conspiracy. Rodman, I did like that Dennis Rodman, who does not care. I was reading as well that Rodman was actually scheduled to re-debut weeks earlier. His contract this time, the reason he's back, Lee, are you ready for this? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know the backstage circumstances in which Rodman came back for his final run. He came back as part of a settlement.
For God's sake.
From a lawsuit that arose over last time when, I believe, was it the WCW tried to not pay him because in his last run leading up to Bash at the Beach, he no-showed a bunch of Nitros?
Yes.
And as part of the deal, like whatever settlement they made, they gave him another contract to return. And he is getting paid for this one run, which I think is 5 appearances. Do you know how much he's being paid?
No, but do I want to know?
Channel your best Dr. Evil, my friend, because he's being paid $1 million for this.
5 appearances for a non-wrestler.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, he started off this run by no-showing a Nitro. So when he eventually returned to confront Savage, it wasn't the original week he was planned to be there, which is great as well. But we get to see him in this segment, like, casually stroll out and abduct Gorgeous George, which sends Savage off in a tirade. He finds her backstage and then runs out to the car park, security in tow, to try and get into Rodman's trailer. One other thing I noticed from this flashback, Lee, to Nitro, we will talk about it later during another segment because they finally reveal who it is, but did you notice a very annoying voice on commentary?
I did, and I knew instantly who it was.
Yes. Yeah, and if you don't, you will be knowing later on, so fucking brace yourself for that one. Saturday night tease, it's 1 hour long this week. We're going to see Jimmy Hart and the First Family in action, Vans Hammer, and the main event is the West Texas Rednecks versus Ray and the No Limit Soldiers. By the way, Master P, another guy who was getting like $1 million plus deal to not wrestle. That was just his pay. That doesn't like encompass the pay of everybody else in the No Limit Soldiers, by the way.
I like that you had to get the Vans Hammer mentioned in there.
Obviously. So the next match, another fucking Matt classically, 4-match show, and these are the 2 you're trotting out. That cat match to start things off with Barry Darzo, and now Eric Watts versus Buff Bagwell.
I think we're gonna differ on this match.
Are we?
I think so.
Look, I don't think this was atrocious. I don't think it was good though.
I think it was fine. I don't think it was good. I don't think it was bad either. It was just
I think
I think you've had
your brain broken so much by that Goldberg segment. I think you finally snapped and you're through the looking glass now. And you're where I am, where you're starting to actually work yourself into enjoying bad matches.
I think I've done this before with Eric Watts. I think Eric Watts is perfectly serviceable as a TV wrestler at this point.
Jesus God.
He looks like shit. Don't get me wrong. He doesn't look good.
Look, we'll talk about his gear in a second. Talk about his gear in a second. But I want to talk about DDP is doing a hell of a lot of PR at the moment because Tanae is plugging. He's spending all week on Hollywood Squares. He's appearing on Craig Kilborn. And he's going to make his first film appearance in the film First Daughter. And I got to ask you, Lee, on the spot, are we going to watch First Daughter at some point or is that joining the Days of Thunder banned list?
Well, it's not on the banned list. I just don't, like, I don't want to watch it.
Do I have to watch it? I don't know.
Is it essential?
Look, how am I to tell you, like, interpret this art that I am just now learning for the first time exists? I knew there was one called the President's Daughter.
Yeah, I thought that's
that had
the
Katie
one.
Katie Holmes in it. No, that's not. This isn't the Katie Holmes one. This is what looks to very much be a TV movie, just based on the poster. I'm actually struggling to find the synopsis for this. Ah, yes. After an agent saves the U.S. president by not following procedure, she's demoted to looking after the teenage first daughter on a wilderness tour with other teenagers. Problems arise.
Is Dallas Page one of the teenagers?
Dallas Page is playing Dirk Lindman.
He looks like a Dirk.
Yeah, it's... There's actually a couple of people who I know in this. Alan Dale is quite a famous character actor. And Dominic Purcell, who is Lincoln, the jacked brother in Prison Break, is in this.
Okay. But this was obviously pre-fame.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, very much, yeah. Yes. Yeah, this looks real bad. Real, real bad.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I'm not watching it.
Okay.
But obviously...
Until somebody pays for it.
I was just going to say, if somebody pays me to do it, I'll do it.
Eric Watts is dressed like what would happen if your mom made you a Jeff Hardy costume for Halloween.
Or basically what Jeff Hardy dresses like when he's intoxicated.
I mean, if anybody dressed themselves while intoxicated, they would end up similar to this with a tight Under Armour style vest, baggy ended jeans with these weird yellow accents going up the seam. Terrible, terrible.
I mean, it was probably of its time. I mean, I wasn't dressing that way, but I mean...
I wasn't. I don't know anybody else was, but I guess it must have been of the time. Buff is all over him. Couple of big arm drags. Clotheslines him over the top. They get back in. Slow motion drop down spot. Buff ducks a clothesline. Punch, drop kick. 10 punch, but Watts stops him at 8 and drops him neck first on the ropes. Eric mocks the Buff pose and does the most... Oh my God. He does this running kick to Buff's side that's the most dainty. I really hope I don't lay it in too much. And this is where we very much differ because at some point I stopped taking notes for a while and wrote, this is so shite.
Sorry, I was taking a drink and trying not to laugh. look, I don't know what to tell you. I enjoyed it. I think the work was fine.
You've got Thunder Brain. And it's okay. I've got it too.
And look, watch through a nice lariat.
He then does repeated pin attempts and one of the most diabolical mule kick attempts I've ever seen while Buff is kneeling at the ropes.
What did you think of his twisting splash that definitely wasn't a moonsault that Tanae called a moonsault?
Oh, God, it was awful. The other thing that made me hoot during this was Buff's comeback, which features Eric Watts doing the most comically bad stinger splash into an empty turnbuckle you've ever seen in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before he even leaps off the ground, Buff is about 10 foot clear of that turnbuckle. It's so horrendous. like, there's just, for some reason, I don't know if Buff, like, had a word with him beforehand about him laying stuff in with other people, but, like, he was terrified to lay a hand on Buff, to do anything that would be anywhere close to stiffing Buff in this.
Well, as we know, Buff is on the edge at this time.
He certainly is.
He's about to get into some real situations.
He's on the edge, and edges don't have sides. Watts slams him down and goes for a Vader bomb, knees up from Buff. Buff absolutely rocks him with a fucking drop kick off an Irish whip. Buff was not afraid to lay it in, I will say. Watts leapfrogs absolutely nothing, and then takes the most ridiculous Rikishi inside out bump off a jogging shoulder barge from Buff.
Yeah, you're really playing it down. I thought Watts did a good job on the comeback.
Oh, I didn't. He hits a blockbuster, but Cat is in to interfere, drops an elbow on Watts by accident as the Cat bails.
He wasn't in to interfere. He missed the pinfall.
Yeah, I guess.
I wouldn't mind. He was standing in the aisle for the majority of the match and still somehow missed the three count.
Yeah. Incredible. Incredible idiot.
Fucking shit.
Buff clears out Sonny Ono on the ramp and then starts dancing. Nitro for what is being called a gut check match. It's Hennig versus Goldberg again. And then it's revealed very quickly who that annoying voice on Nitro was, Lee. It's star of an early rehash of the champions, Jason Hervey.
Mm-hmm.
I am surmising from what we already read about Scott Hudson and what's happening now with Jason Hervey, and a couple more changes I know are coming very soon to broadcasts, that Bischoff is extremely unhappy with commentary in WCW. It's getting, in the very nascent days of the internet at the moment, the commentary is getting eviscerated.
Yeah, I think we talked about this when Bischoff was given the executive producer role over WCW. Tony Schiavone was his boss as an announcer. So Tony was the head of the commentators, yeah, basically. Like, the current role that Michael Cole
not
has.
Only that, but Tony... Yeah, not only that, but Tony was expected by many in the company to be the one that got the job Bischoff did then get.
So, the fact that it's taken nigh on 5 years for Bischoff to finally take Schiavone off the air is more of a shock than the fact that Schiavone was taken off the air to me. But yeah, no, like you say, I think people were very down on the Schiavone and Heenan team at this point. And obviously they've tried a couple of things with Thunder. And I mean, I don't love the Tanay and Zbyszko team. But at least it's different.
I like Tanay. He's certainly not as good as he would eventually be, but I like Tanay. Mm-hmm.
But look, at least it's different from Nitro. And
yeah.
The whole like you just called out at the start of the show, it Hudson thing is an experiment, but obviously within the first week Bischoff was letting people know that he liked the energy it brought. So yeah, you can tell that they're trying things and they're trying to freshen up the company. Like, they've already changed the set, the new logo, like they are trying things. I will give them credit on that. It's just the fact that they're doing this with money that isn't theirs, so they don't really give a fuck in the end.
Yeah, on Heenan as well, we do only have a few months left of him on commentary at all. He's gone by January 2000.
Yes, he is.
So that's another thing that changes in the relatively near future. But anyway, I realized very quickly, it's like, oh, it's one of those Thunders where they're just showing entire Nitro matches.
Mm-hmm.
So is there much to get into apart from, like, Goldberg gets lamped with a bull rope and starts bleeding from the forehead, which is not the first or last time that he ends up bleeding from the forehead in a match?
Yeah, he takes a full-on cowbell shot to the head. Like, legit takes it. He actually does a great bump off it as well. but like I said, we're not gonna review a Nitro match. Goldberg basically beats the fuck out of Red X and they get DQ'd.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Goldberg's fully... Goldberg's big return ends in the DQ.
Yeah, there's also no better way to describe it. At one point, then he yeeted Hennig out of the ring. Like, he sent that man flying.
I will say, Kurt Hennig, who, as we pointed out numerous times on the show, is absolutely washed by this point. He fucking bumps like a maniac for Goldberg in this match.
Yeah, no, I respect the hell out of it. Fair play. Like, he knows when he needs to turn it on, and he still can in very, very concentrated ways. So I respect that. Triad promo with a really weird close-up angle of the cameraman actually inside the ring, which you don't normally get on Thunder. I thought that was quite unusual. It does make it feel a little bit different, so I was kind of like, okay, this is cool. Paige does the "You'll Never Forget Me" thing in Booker T's direction. Bam Bam demands Booker T, who he describes as a cheese whiz sucking ass, to come down. And this week, their mama joke for him is that his mother was apparently so rotund, she got baptized at SeaWorld. So there you go.
Cue the laughter.
This leads us into Bam Bam Bigelow with the rest of the triad versus Booker T. And they are pushing hard the Harlem Heat return. Leading right into this. So, like, I think because WCW is so heavy-handed, I was like, okay, right, the reunion is happening in this segment.
Oh, yeah. Because
they're not ones to play the long game on this. It's like, right, okay, they're pulling the trigger on this one.
Yeah.
And you know what? For once, I'll give them this, Lee. They actually pulled the trigger on an important angle that people wanted to see on Thunder.
I will say, this segment hit all the right beats. They did everything that you would have wanted. I think Booker and Bam Bam had I don't want to say a good match. It was fine. They worked decently hard. Like, they begin the match at a decent clip, and it does grind to a halt a little bit, but the match is fine. And then post-match, they hit all the right beats. They do everything you want them to do. And yeah, I thought this was a good segment for a taped Thunder.
It achieved the goal,
yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure. And yeah, as you were kind of alluding to, the triad jump Booker for the DQ, which causes Stevie to come out to save them with a pair of chairs. Crowd chanting Harlem Heat. Stevie says to them, "Listen up," says, "If those three fruit booties have any guts, they will face the two of them like men." Offers his hand to reunite with Booker to take them out. Booker says he wants to see him take his shirt off because he's wearing the NWO shirt, and he obliges. He says he needed someone to watch his back, and now he needs his brother. They hug to a huge cheer. So Harlem Heat are officially back, Lee.
And they raise the roof together.
They do. They raise the roof together. We will have them back for pretty much the rest of the year before the breakup angle happens yet again in early 2000. And that is going to be one of the most tedious things we'll have to endure in 2000. So look forward to that, eh?
Mm-hmm. Can't we?
Hogan back on Nitro calling out Nash for a piece of him. Nash came out with Rick and Sid. We had seen them kind of form an alliance of evil recently. They start brawling, but Hogan is beat down 3-1. Sting came out for the save. Kevin points out that Hogan was right. That Hulk can't do it alone. Sting says he has a big first decision as president. Should he be Hulk's partner tonight? Hogan says he won't stab him in the back. Sting says, "If he does, I'm going to get you." Fast forward to Sting and Hogan versus Nash and Vicious. Norton screams, "Did they see this coming?" And I was just like, because the whole thing was like, who is he going to... who of the two people is Nash going to team with? Is it going to be Rick Steiner or Sid Vicious? I can't believe that was a thing that they hung dramatic tension on.
Hang on.
And Norton tried to sell it like, oh, it's so fucking weird. What, yeah?
You've just said twice Norton. I believe it's Scott Hudson on commentary, not Scott Norton. As good as that would be.
Sorry, yeah. Oh, do you know what? It must have autocorrected because I'm so used to writing in Scott Norton, so it's gone. It went from Scott Norton to Scott Hudson. I mean, Scott Norton on commentary would be interesting. So Hudson screams on commentary, "Did they see this coming?" When Sid of all people comes out, I'm like, it was literally a 50% chance.
Why was it a shock? I don't get it. It's so dumb.
Yeah. Sid does an inverted... you talk about people that are afraid to hurt people. Sid does the most gentle inverted atomic drop that was very reminiscent of the giant choke nap back in the day on Hogan. Helping Grandpa Hogan get... he even helps him back up off the mat, remember?
Yep.
He does that and then he helps him back up to help him to his feet. Match breaks down very quickly. Sting and Hogan clear house. Nash is mad. Hervey is awful. And then, yeah, that's about as much as I want to really get into this. As well, like, this disgrace of a presentation was put on in the fucking Mid-South Coliseum.
Oh, yeah. Just fucking... It's WCW in 1999. They don't give a fuck. Like, they won't play...
Yeah, also, Goldberg looks like an idiot because he comes out way too late to say the baby faces as well.
And then gets taken out himself. Yeah, like, you know how AW will always, like, play into the locale it's in? WCW just ignore all that. Mm-hmm.
Can you believe, Lee, we're already at our main event?
Yes.
This is a six-man tag team match. Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, and Perry Saturn versus Ric Flair and the Triad members, DDP and Canyon. And it's the main event segment, and fuck all happens.
Yeah, just a total nutting. I do enjoy the fact that Ric Flair holding people back is now storyline canon. That's just a thing that happens now. And it's a thing that will continue to be...
Ric Flair, who, like...
to be pushed as an angle on WCW until the day it does.
Yeah. But and they're kind of... Now they're in a point where they kind of have to run with it because the guy they've just hired to go into a feud with him and his mates is a guy who made his career burying Ric Flair as holding people back. Mm-hmm. So whether they want to or not, this is kind of where they funnel themselves into. But it was a classic one of those Thunder main events, Lee, where it was just like they're just killing time to get to the post-match. Like, they have absolutely no desire on doing anything interesting or worthwhile here.
Like, nothing actually... the runtime on the main event is 10 minutes, and I don't think anything happens for 8.5 minutes.
Yeah, and that's relatively generous, I think. What have we got here? I got, like, Canyon does a cool bridging roll-up at one point. Saturn does a 10-punch on Flair. Oh, yeah, this is, again, like, look at the common thread. Like, the cool things are always either Canyon or one of the three guys in the Revolution here. Because there's a bit where a 10-punch spot is happening and Canyon breaks it up by getting in and doing a side Russian leg sweep off the middle
rope.
I
knew you'd pop for that one.
Yes. You know I love a side Russian leg sweep, but off the middle rope to break a 10-punch, brilliant. They go through a break, DDP in charge, tags in Canyon, they double team, tags Paige back in. Saturn tries to fight back, match breaks down. Benoit fucks Canyon up with a dragon suplex and a headbutt. Then Bam Bam misses a headbutt and hits Canyon. Flair knocks out Benoit with a roll of quarters. Canyon gets pulled over the corpse and wins. Then Shane Douglas comes out about a week later.
I will say, before we get to the Douglas promo, it's so obvious, not just in hindsight, but at the time, that they viewed Chris Benoit as so far above Malenko and Saturn. Like, he's the guy that clears house. Yeah. He's the guy that gets the hot tag. Like, even at this point in 1999, they're treating Benoit as a guy.
Yeah, like, if this guy is 4 inches taller, he's already a 5-time
easily
champion.
Like,
at this
stage. This is the guy that would have been, like, in the Goldberg spot before Goldberg.
Yeah, like, they go through cycles of talking up, like, how good they think he is, and then, like, right when he's about to break through to that next level, they talk themselves out of it, and it just keeps happening over and over and over again. Yeah, just an interesting one. So yeah, like we said, a week late, because we thought he was going to come out on the last Thunder, Shane comes out not only a week late for Thunder, but like way too late to affect the outcome of this match anyway, either way. he says this is exactly what he was talking about. A screw job has been happening in this company for far too long. Young talent can only be held back for so long. He's not surprised with the politics that his flight was delayed. So he's accusing Ric Flair of cancelling his flight or some shit. He says, you can't stop the revolution. They are the scalpels to cut out the cancer. So now it's confirmed, like, who he's been talking about, who he was talking about in his comeback promo. We all knew it was Flair, but now he's got his eyes fixed on Flair. The Revolution officially have their name as well. But Lee, I think the most kind of like the big underlying point here is that it's one of those early angles where people writing the show think everyone is already online all the time, and they all they want is angles that talk about backstage bullshit and who's being held back and shit like that. And people couldn't give a fuck less.
Yeah, and like it's hard to fathom at this point in 2023, like, just how little of the wrestling fan base was actually online at this point. And even if they were online, there's no guarantee that they were seeing this backstage drama stuff. So
yeah, or getting accurate information.
Like the whole knock on Russo is that he booked for like the 5% of people that watched the show that were aware of online drama. Yeah. And that's what it was. It was legit.
That were him. He was fascinated by the online drama, so he assumed everyone must be.
Yeah, so, like, to say it was even 5% of the audience at this point is probably being generous. What I want to say is, it's a damn shame that by this point in 1999 that Shane Douglas could no longer go, because I thought that it was a good little promo. And one thing I'll always say is Douglas is a captivating character in the sense that he can cut a good promo when he's given a structure and it's kind of kept on point. And it's just a shame that, like, his body was already pretty broken down at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, we have the story for a bunch of dudes across wrestling history. Like, it's such a shame that Kurt Hennig gets to WCW and he feels like he's finally having fun and he's comfortable, and then like a bunch of his friends die and he's also washed. You know, like, it's awful.
Like, we talk about it at the time, like, the teased Rick Rude perfect tag team, or Hennig tag team, would have been so good.
The one thing I think of a lot as well, like, current day, like, he's not completely washed by any stretch, but I often think of Joe.
Yeah.
Samoa Joe, who is, like, at his most confident and comfortable character-wise as he's ever been, but unfortunately his body has not completely, but a little bit missed the boat. Like, he's not near his physical peak.
I think we've talked about this on the show before, but this is something that Joe Lanza talks about. It's where wrestlers have this sliding scale of physical peak will be super high, but like confidence and charisma levels will be super low, and then as they go through their careers, one goes up, the other goes down, and like they do have that perfect moment where they're level on both. But it's Douglas is very much in the, like, at his peak as a talker at this point, but like physically he's just fucking damaged.
It's a real shame. But anyway, that's the end of this episode, this very brief episode of Thunder. What did you think of the show overall, and who are your winners and losers? Hit me up.
It's hard to care about a taped show. Like, the fans don't care. Like, as we pointed out, you're getting Barry Darso and Eric Watts trotted out on the show.
He's giving out about it now.
I thought Watts was fine. Just the fans don't give a flying fuck about him. Like you said, like, the main event, we're getting a 6-man tag, but like, it's very obviously just an angle. So like, the wrestlers are working kind of half pace and just very obviously just want to get through it. Of the people on the show, I'm guessing Booker T and Stevie Ray are the winners because the fans actually invested in the Harlem Heat reunion.
Yeah, it was the biggest reaction on the show, wasn't it? The biggest genuine reaction.
It was probably, compared to even last week's show, it was probably the biggest reaction in the arena. Losers, I fucking don't know. Like, us for having to watch Barry Darso at this point.
Yeah.
True. Like, the cat is so fucking bad. I genuinely, like, the cat is fucking, like, he is dire.
He is, Cat in 99 is what Disco was to me in 98 on this show.
Yeah, except you're not doing a bit where you're putting over the cat.
No, I wouldn't try and work you like you tried to work me.
But yeah, that's my takeaway. Fuck the cat and yay Harlem Heat.
Yay Harlem Heat indeed. Yeah, like I can't, like as always, my friend, you do a fine job of determining the winners and losers. Well,
actually, when's the go home show for the pay-per-view?
It's not. It's like I think 2 or 3 weeks from now.
So we still have a couple of thunders to get through.
I can find out for you right about now if you'd like.
I would.
Okay. Well, you know, bear with me there for a second as I bring up our little episode guide here. Now, do you want to know how many weeks it is, or how many podcasts?
How many thunders do we have to go through before?
Okay. So we still have two thunders.
Okay.
And then we also have, I'll double check this, it appears Thunder is preempted then on the week before the pay-per-view, is it? Oh, no, sorry, no, it's a double shot. So Thunder 74 happens, then we're doing Knights of Nitro. So, so Hulk had said in his radio interview last week that the red and yellow isn't returning. It returns in 2 weeks.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So we even overestimated just how fucking truthful the man was being. Oh.
So we got Thunder 74. Then we're going to do the red and yellow return Nitro, which is the same night as Raw as Jericho.
Yes, which we just passed that anniversary, actually.
Yeah. And then we've got the go home is Thunder 75 before Road Wild.
Okay, so we've three shows. Okay.
Yeah. So look forward to that one. Our final little bit of business, the Finnish counter brought to you by Ludwig Borga is one of my favorite and most Thunder breakdowns so far. 4 matches, 0 clean finishes.
Hell yeah.
2 DQs or countouts and 2 interferences leading directly to a finish.
2 DQs. On a taped show. Fucking hell. Yeah.
Incredible. Love this company. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. We should be back on the free feed in 2 weeks. If that is not enough for you, if you want to hear more of our dulcet tones, please go to alargemanappears.com and check out. We do twice as many podcasts every month. We're talking at least 3 extra episodes every single month down your podcast pipes for only 5 Europeans. So check that out. We'll talk to you very soon. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. To keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us, you can follow us on Twitter at WCWThunderPod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks.
Like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.